or something like that. And I was on my giraffe unicycle, my 8-foot giraffe unicycles, and was just starting to juggle fire, I think, or I was just about to start juggling. And this drunk guy walks up to me and say, "Hey, you have to stay and stand still on that thing," because I was idling. Of course, you were riding back and forth.
Yes.
And he put his hand down and grabbed my wheel. Say, "Stand still."
Oh, no.
And can you imagine what happens when you're 8 feet up and somebody just holds your wheel? You fall.
All right. So, listen, right? Falling off an 8-foot unicycle, that not something that I'd want to do. I've got an 8-foot unicycle, and falling off it terrifies me. But Lars, whoo, he was fine. And I'd like to talk a bit about our sponsors. I've got a couple of words for you. Unicycle.com, of course. Unicycle.com China. Oh, some people have been asking me, what is unicycle-china.cn? It's the same thing. It's unicycle.com China. Because the best place to get a unicycle is at unicycle.com. And if you're in Hong Kong or Taiwan, you can use unicycle.com China's online Taobao store. That's shop 48528150.taobao.com. Because the freight, well, it is so much cheaper. I got myself a new unicycle seat and a seat post from unicycle.com China's Taobao store, and the shipping is practically free. I mean, wow, you can't get much better than that. And these people at unicycle.com, they really know what they're talking about, okay? They offer the best unicycle deals in the world, and at unicycle.com China can even send you specific items that you can't find on their website. You just ask for Alex at unicycle.com China. So go there right now and get yourself a unicycle. This week, as I briefly mentioned earlier, this week we're talking to Danish unicyclist, a great friend of mine, Lars Lottrup. My apologies for any terrible pronunciation of your Danish name, Lars. Fantastic guy. I met him back in 1996 at a convention, and well, let's go and talk to him. Lars.
So I did go to a European juggling convention, but surely you weren't at a European juggling convention.
I was there
in France.
Yes, in Grenoble.
That's right. We must have met then.
So I got the first time I've ever tried mountain unicycling.
That must
They
be
came
it,
up with it there in Grenoble.
Yeah.
And we were walking up this big mountain and we were riding down on the tracks.
Yeah. That must be it then. So I had the year in my head. It was 1996.
Yeah. Wow.
There you are. Wow. Now it's, what, 24 years later. My goodness. All right,
and so we're still unicycling.
We're still unicycling. That's what I want to start with. Because I've got a sponsor. Unicycle.com China is going to sponsor this podcast. And you used to
That's a great company.
You used to run Unicycle.com Denmark, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Okay, before we get to that.
For 10 years or so.
Before we get to that, so tell me, how and when did you start unicycling? Where did this begin for you?
Oh, that's hard to look that far back. Well, now I'm 48. I started unicycling as 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite a while ago. I was getting, what is it called in English? Confirmation, when you, after your baptism, you confirm your faith and so on.
Yes.
So that, in Denmark, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You have a big party and you get a lot of gifts, which is kind of the main deal about it in Denmark. And back then, I was so fascinated about circus. I've been for a long time, and my local bike shop had a unicycle hanging in the window, it was so fascinating. I just wanted a unicycle, but it was expensive. Mm-hmm. Well, back then it was. It's the same price as today, but the money were worth a lot more back then.
And you were 13 years old, right? 13. Is that it?
Yeah, it was 1987.
Yeah.
And when I was confirmed, I finally had the money to buy my own unicycle.
Yeah.
I was elated, and I got my unicycle, but it was hard. Hey, that was not the rules. So I was trying to learn to ride for a long time, and it didn't work. So after a couple of months, I think, I just put it in the closet and left it there.
Okay.
But the year after, I saw a girl who lived kind of near, close to me. She was a year younger than me, mm-hmm. and she could ride a unicycle.
Ooh.
Hey, a girl, and she's younger than me, and she can ride? Well, then I can learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And that it sounds stupid, but that motivated me to put the focus in, and I learned to ride it. And that really made me happy, so I brought a unicycle everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
At that time, I got to a, well, it's kind of like a boarding school. It's a school where you live at the school, and you have special classes like circus and, well, a lot of football or soccer and so on. I don't think that kind of school is in many countries, but it's not as strict as a boarding school, but because you go there for fun.
Right.
So it's mainly for ninth grade, eighth and ninth grade in the normal school.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to one of those schools and brought my unicycle.
Yeah.
So there I learned to ride it inside the in the school, even though all the teachers said, "Hey, get off that thing." But when they turned the corner, I jumped on it again and kept riding. But there were a circus class of that school, and I never got into that circus class, but I learned to juggle in one of the pastime activities. And then I learned how to combine unicycling and juggling, and then things just grew. I wanted to learn everything that was possible within circus.
Right.
So I learned to eat fire, spit fire, to do the lasso, to roll a bola, to everything.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic time. And to continue my story, that period of time, then I went to high school, and I was doing so many things with this circus stuff, and one lady one day asked me if I would come and show what I was doing, what I could do.
Yeah,
sure, that was always fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So I made a kind of a show, and I believe I had I had 15 numbers or acts in my show.
Wow!
So 15 times I changed what I did from juggling clubs to juggling knives to eating fire to so can you imagine? I think I did half an hour or so. That was very intense, very confusing, and shifting every time. But I had a blast, and after the show, she gave me some money.
Ooh.
and I was just, hey, this was not the deal, but great. And a whole new world opened for me at that time.
Uh-huh.
Imagine getting paid doing what you love.
Yeah.
Wow. So I started trying to get shows and teaching acts and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Denmark, and it was with Danish currency. So I think I got paid 300 kroner, which is like 50. $50 or a bit less than that, $40 maybe for a show.
Yeah.
And that could be 1 hour.
Yeah. Wow.
So, I mean, it was really, really bad pay.
Yeah.
But I was lousy.
Yeah.
So the pay matched my whatever I delivered. So, I mean, it was a fair change. And after a while, I got better and better, and I raised my salary and so on. And around, I think it was around 90 or somewhere around there, I met a guy who was performing on the streets in Denmark on a very tall unicycle.
Ah.
And he was brilliant on the unicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, not many people were. So I got to know him, and I wanted to be friends with him.
Yes.
And we became good friends, and we started performing together. Because I've always been a good salesman. So I could book the jobs for us.
Yeah.
And I could get paid better and more when we were two, and he was a lot better performer than me. So but we shared the profit half and half because I got the jobs and he did most of the performing, and I was in it and I learned.
What so, is his name?
His name is Pelle Henriksen.
Okay.
Pelle is Pelle. P-A-L-L-E.
Pellets. Okay. He's just Googling something, I think.
Yeah, I'm just looking at if I can find him.
It's okay. We'll put that in later. Don't worry. We'll put it in the list.
Yeah. But we did a lot of shows together. We were performing on the streets, and we were performing on gigs that I booked for us, corporate events mainly, or city fairs and so on.
Yeah,
it was a great time.
Wow.
We had a lot of jobs, and I my pay has gone up 10 times at that time. so I was getting paid a decent amount of money.
Yes.
And we were also in Tenerife and in the Canary Islands.
Wow.
in Spain.
Wow.
We were, that was right off, oh, that was further back, that was 98, I believe. So it was quite a long time after that. And there were three people performing there. They had been to a circus school in Russia, those three, and one of the guys had to go to a university in Denmark. So Pelle asked me, could I come and take over for this guy?
Mm-hmm.
So I was performing with them for 3 months, and we had a show every evening in a new hotel, and had a 14-day tour. That was quite fun, but hard work.
You've got a giraffe unicycle in your show as well.
Is
that 8 foot high? It looked like a really high one.
No, it's 2.5 meters.
2.5 meters, yeah. That's, wow. That's about 8 feet.
Oh, it is.
Oh. You got me. Oh, God. So tell me about your unicycle acts. I've seen you with kids on your shoulders on a 20-inch unicycle. I've seen you climbing up this 2.5 meter, 8 foot high unicycle.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about some of the acts you do on your unicycle? To please my sponsors. And to please me as well. I love unicycling.
And your sponsor is very good. Unicycle.com is a great company. They have done so much for developing the sport in the world. It's fantastic, yeah.
And you used to run unicycle.com Denmark.
I did. Okay. Yes, I did.
I've seen a video of you, I think some sport. You came on at this award ceremony or something, and you were wheel walking on your unicycle. You are so good at wheel walking on a 20-inch unicycle. How did you, any tips, how did you get so good at that?
Practice. I mean, It brings me back to the beginning where I said I brought my unicycle everywhere.
Yeah.
And at that time, we had the Danish Nationals, which was just some small gathering with maybe 50 people. Mm. And I kept winning every single time because,
So you're really into it, really, really into practicing and every day.
Yes, yes. Yeah, but to me, it wasn't practicing.
No.
To me, it was just being on my unicycle. When I went to the cinema with friends, I was riding on the unicycle. They were walking. I always had along with me in public transportation. I just had a big plastic bag to put it into, and it was just luggage, and I shouldn't pay for the transportation.
That's a great tip for unicyclists. Yes, if you take your unicycle and you just bring along a sack or a plastic bag, if somebody comes up to you and says, oh, you can't have a bicycle here, you just say, oh, it's in a bag and it's fine. Yes, good tip.
Yeah, because it's not, they can't see through the bag. They're not allowed to look inside your luggage. So it's just a bag. So I was on my unicycle every day, and that gave me such a confidence and a routine on my unicycle. So it was, I did jokes where I told my friends to push me off, and I would buy them a beer if they could, and they never could. So even though they were on 2 feet and perhaps three people pushing me, I stayed on. So when I went to Unicon for the first time in China, I also won the sumo tournament.
Oh yes.
This is where you have a big ring and you're sort of one on one and you have to push the other rider off the unicycle.
Yes.
Great fun. I love that game. And I kept doing gladiator competitions in when the Danish unicyclists were meeting up. Gladiator is where you have a big hole or something, and there's still a boundary, mm-hmm. and you're all riders are riding at the same time, and the last one standing is the winner. So push each other off or out of the boundaries. So because this, to me, the essence of unicycling, it is total control of your balance on the unicycle. If you're pushed, how do you regain your balance?
Right.
This and slow riding, the slow ride competition, is also total control of the wheel, which is to me a great fascination. No, 2000 was not my first Unicon. It was 98 in Germany. Mm. That was my first Unicon.
Okay.
In 2000, I had brought a lot of Danish people.
Yes.
I was the first Dane to participate outside of Denmark in unicycling event, but unfortunately that was not England in 96, it was 98 in Germany.
Yes.
But in 2000, I had formed the Danish national team.
You'd formed it?
Yeah. Well, I just made up, let's bring all the guys, and who want to come? All right, you guys, you want to come? You're the Danish national team. And I gathered these guys for the 2 years up to Unicon, and I practiced with them. They came from all over the country,
yeah,
from different unicycling clubs. But we gathered in one club, and we had a weekend practice, maybe once a month.
Yes.
And they couldn't wheel walk, so that was their level. And they were not very good at the unicycle, but they were passionate.
Yes.
So we did the gladiator thing every weekend for a warm up.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, it was everybody against me.
Yes.
And there were 15 riders. So I had 15 people going against me on my unicycle. And in the beginning, I had my hands behind my back.
Gosh.
And I still won every now and then. And then later, within half a year, I think, they got so good that I should be alert, and we were doing everybody on everybody, and I didn't win every time.
Right.
So it was Gladiator is a great way of improving your unicycling skills.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's interesting. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, because you get so good at regaining your balance if you're pushed or hit a curb or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a good little tip. And I ran the national team for 7 years.
Wow.
And brought them to many many unicorns,
You were quite noticeable in England. In England, we have a phrase which is punch above your weight, and this means if you're a boxer and you don't weigh much, but you can beat a boxer who's heavier than you, you're punching above your weight. And Denmark is a small country, and yet when I'd go to a unicorn, I'd see the English team or the team where I was from Singapore was pretty much in disarray. We weren't very organised. We hadn't practised. We hadn't met up. We weren't very good at any of the competitions. At the first unicorn in England in 1996, only one Englishman entered a freestyle competition. It just wasn't something we did. So seeing Denmark, you punched above your weight. Your team was noticeable. It was like, oh, who are these guys? All dressed in orange. They're good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the beginning, in year 2000 in China, we were named Team Sumo because we had been doing Gladiator and Sumo so much. So when the Sumo competition came up, we beat them all.
Yes.
Even our small Danish girls were excellent and could beat guys twice their size and so on.
I'm going to try unicycle sumo. I've never really thought about this.
Yeah.
Is it a bit dangerous though when you fall off? You might land on top of your unicycle badly. But
yeah, of course you can hit a fallen unicycle. And if you fall on your butt and roll back and hit your head, of course that can hurt your head. But it's so rare.
Yeah.
I've been doing sumo and gladiator for 30 years.
Okay.
I think we have had one or two broken arms in the competitions, and then I've done thousands.
That's no worse than unicycycle hockey, which
No, I would say it's worse than hockey because you have the stick and you have the puck you're chasing.
Yeah, I've seen more injuries in unicycle hockey. You're right, I have.
Yeah.
Including me.
Yeah.
I broke my arm once.
Yeah. But after 7 years of teaching the national team, I had too much work performing.
Mm.
So practicing weekends and every weekend I had two, three, four shows.
Yes,
so
yes.
I was hardly there. So I said I have to withdraw from the teaching leading position. So I gave it over to one of the very good students, Tanya.
Yeah.
We probably met at Unicorns, but she has been running the national team ever since.
Mm.
And she took it to way new heights. So it's her benefit that that Denmark won the group freestyle routine twice or three times.
Yeah.
So and that is the most prestigious competition at Unicorn, the World Championship. So
yes.
So wow. That's been really great.
That is amazing.
But she has been very good for the team. That's fantastic.
Let's talk about your show as well then. Let's talk unicycling in your show as well then. So,
yes.
Do you always bring two unicycles, a 20-inch and a giraffe for your show?
Yes.
And
I have two giraffes in my car. I have a 1.5 meter and the 2.5 meter.
Oh, wow.
Because I usually ask the venue how high is it and so on and so on. But sometimes there ain't room for a 2.5 meter unicycle.
Yeah.
So I bring my 1.5 meter unicycle as a backup.
That's a good idea. What a great idea. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I always go by car, so it's easy for me to bring it.
Mm. So, but surely take the unicycle to pieces to fit it in your car, and then when you get to the venue,
my car is bought to fit that tall unicycle.
Oh, that's so crazy. I've got a crazy.
But I have a Nimbus Performer giraffe.
Yes.
Now we're talking about unicycle.com. It's bought from unicycle.com. It's their best giraffe, which you can take apart in pieces.
Mm.
And right above the cranks, there is a hatch where you can take off the seat post.
Yes.
All the way to the pedals.
That's good.
And that brings it down to 1.80 meters, so less than my height.
Yes.
And that can fit in the back of a normal sedan.
Brilliant.
Whatever. Car.
Brilliant. So
station car.
You get to the show. I guess that the first unicycle act would be the 20-inch. What do you do on the 20-inch in your show?
I do a kick-up mount, mm-hmm. where I do some jokes about getting on it and not getting on it, and I am a clown when I'm performing, but without the nose and the costume, I am a very good-looking artistic costume.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a lovely costume.
Orange and black, and all my gear is orange and black, kept in those colors. And I do a kick up, and I get a kit. Well, before Corona, before this, whatever it is, came along. I had a kit and to put on my shoulders, and we did some tricks up there, and so on. Now we're jumping around and stuff.
You can jump around with the kid on your shoulders while you're riding the unicycle.
Yeah, I did, but it's too hard on my back because everything ends up in your lower back. Mm-hmm. It's not good. But we did wheel walking and stuff like that.
With the kid on your shoulders? Wow.
Sure.
Brilliant.
And then I ended up doing a balloon figure for the kid, which was him on a unicycle. But now I don't do that.
Because of the current coronavirus situation.
Now I don't get a kit up because I had to touch her too much to get him on my shoulders. And, well, physical contact is not really encouraged in these times.
Yeah.
So I skipped, remove that act from my show.
Okay.
So after that, I do the giraffe. I try to get on it myself. Usually it doesn't work. But I get somebody from the audience to hold it, and he's not strong enough, so I get one more guy from the audience, two big guys to hold it, and I climb them to get on the unicycle.
Climb them, and then you can reach the pedals to get on this
unicycle. Yes.
Okay, got it.
And then I give my torches to one guy, a girl from the audience, and I get her to light them and bring them to me, and I juggle fire on the unicycle.
That's interesting. So you're saying that because of changing times, it's no longer appropriate to have a small kid on your shoulders, but they still let you juggle fire? Because that's... Where I am in my part of the world, that's been banned pretty much now, juggling fire and a unicycle.
It has? Why?
Well, I don't know. I used to do it a lot, and people would ask for it. And nowadays, I say, would you like me to juggle fire when I'm in your shopping centre? And they say, oh, no.
No, that's right. It's been many years since I've done it in shopping centres. That's right. And when you're indoors at party events and party venues, they usually have smoke detectors.
Yes.
So I usually ask beforehand, is there smoke detectors and can you turn them off that half an hour I'm performing?
Yes.
And half the time it's possible. The other half I use knives for juggling.
Yes.
But there's not as many jokes for the knives as there are for the fire.
Right, yeah.
The fire juggling is just so much more funny.
Yeah. It's also quite dirty as well. How do you keep your props clean, your costume clean, because you've got these dirty fire clubs? Do you have to make sure you...
I've made a special bag for them, made out of, what is that called? Denmark is cold. So in the wintertime, we take the kids and we put them inside a big suit. That is one piece suit for pants and or
yes.
overalls. No, it's not overalls. It's well, I don't know the name.
I think in England it's called a ski suit or a snow suit.
Could be, yeah. It's very hot, very warm, and they can stay warm inside that. And they can lay in the water and not get wet.
Yeah.
So I bought some material that's been used for making jumpsuits.
Right.
And I had it sewn into a bag for my torches.
Right.
Because then I can have the flammable stuff on the torches and in the bag, and it doesn't leak out to everything in my box, in my suitcase.
Oh, that's interesting. That's wonderful. That's a really good idea.
It's a very good trick.
Yeah.
And I can have the balloon lying almost next to it, and it doesn't break because of that.
Oh.
Because, I mean, the fluid will break the balloon easily.
Yes, yes. Ah, that's interesting. I like that. That's a very interesting idea. Yeah.
Yeah, and after I've been performing, I leave the torches on the ground because they're smoking and they're dirty. Of course, they are dirty before that as well. I never clean them, but I just leave them there. Mm. And after the show, I put them back in the bag, and they're safe.
Yeah.
It was quite funny. We met in Hong Kong. Last
yes.
time we met was
yes.
in Hong Kong.
Yes.
That was 2006 or 7.
Probably, yes, round about then.
Yeah. I had my daughter along. She was half a year or so. That's pretty much 2006.
Yeah.
And I do this trick with my big, giant unicycle.
Yes.
The 8-foot unicycle, sorry. 2.5 meter. And I have two guys holding it, and I climb on them, and I step on their head, and I climb it, and so on. I was performing in Hong Kong for the Chinese New Year.
Yeah.
This Chinese New Year was special. It was the golden Chinese New Year. It happens every 10 years, I believe, or every 12 years. It's a special New Year.
Yeah.
And the New Year time is special for the Chinese people. That's where their luck of the next year is determined.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever happens to you, it determines your luck of the next year. And this golden New Year is extra special because what happens to you there determines your luck for the next 10, 12 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine you are very careful what you do. In Hong Kong, being a Chinese, being stepped on the head is a very, very bad omen for your luck. So, can you imagine what the organizers thought about me performing on stage, stepping on heads on the Chinese up to the golden Chinese New Year? Okay, we changed the plans. We do another trick.
Oh.
I have brought my 8-foot giraffe to Hong Kong for nothing.
Oh, no.
I did not use it.
Oh, no. Because to get on the 8-foot giraffe, you're going to end up.
I have to have people hold it, and
heads.
I have to line them, and I cannot avoid stepping on them a little bit.
Yeah,
I could avoid stepping on the head. It's just a gimmick, a joke. It's not needed, but I need to step on maybe their arm or their shoulder because I don't. I know Jamie. He has steps on his unicycle.
That's Jamie Mossengren, episode 69 of this podcast.
I know Jamie, he has steps on his unicycle to get onto it. He has a custom-built one.
Yeah.
Mine does not have steps on it.
Mm.
It's great quality unicycle, but does not have steps. So I did something else.
Mm.
I was invited to China to a big clown festival. One thing I haven't seen before in this clowning act here, clowning festival, they had a Chinese unicycle act, of course.
Yes.
Of course they do this giraffe thing where they kick the balls on top of their head.
Yes.
That's a famous one.
Yes.
But here they had some special unicycles I'd never seen before. The wheel on the unicycle was made out of a metal ring. There were no spokes. There were no hub. There were no nothing. It was just a ring. And the giraffe went down to the sides of the ring and attached there with some pulleys, some wheels, some something that made the ring turn.
Wow.
It was horrible to ride, but they could ride on this big ring, and other people on their normal unicycles could ride through the ring on the unicycle,
on the giraffe. Goodness.
It was so weird, but looked fantastic.
Yes.
But I think it was only fantastic for me as a unicyclist to see, wow, what is this? But for everybody else, it was just a weird unicycle. But it was great fun. I've never seen that before. And I tried, to, of course, to talk them into letting me try it, but they wouldn't.
Oh, Lars, it's so good to see you again. It's been too long.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, look, there's just a few things I have to put in, which are very good for you. If people want to contact you, I'll put this in the notes as well to the podcast, but let's just say it. If they want to reach you, what's your best email address if someone wants to email you, and what's your best website?
Well, there's a difference between what you can find from the... let's take the one called unicycle.dk.
Okay.
That is easy to spell in English, unicycle.
Yeah.
.dk, and there you can find me, and I believe I have my email somewhere on that website.
Yes, there you go. That would be brilliant. So if people want to contact you, unicycle.dk is the website, and then they can find you and email you from there.
So it's not the one I'm using much anymore, but it's easy to spell in Danish. I have about 65 different websites.
You have quite a lot, yeah, I've seen. I was Googling
you. Yeah,
quite a lot of things here. Oh, Lars. Tell me about this amazing unicycle race up and down a medieval tower in Denmark that I think you won quite a few times. Am I right?
A little extra stuff. Yeah, actually, I should have been in the Guinness Book of World Records.
You should have.
I should have, yes. That we have a competition in Denmark called the Round Tower Race.
Okay.
Back in... oh, I can't remember, 1600 maybe, that was built a tower in Denmark where the king could ride up in his horse carriage inside the tower. So there is a spiral road that goes up inside the tower.
What?
Yeah, and the tower is 36 meter high, so it's not giant, but it's quite big.
Yeah.
And the bottom 30 meters is with this road up inside.
Hmm.
It's about 3.5 meter wide.
Mm.
So we have a competition once a year where the road is split in half. So on the outer part, that's not too steep, you go up in this tower on
yes.
unicycle.
Yes, yes.
And on the top, you turn around and you go down on the inside.
Yes.
Half of the spiral. And you have to do it on time.
Mm.
And you're not allowed to fall off.
Right.
So this competition, I won it many times. I think I won it 7 or 8 years. And the prize was a tiny silver unicycle where the wheel can rotate, made by some artist in Israel, I believe. But one year, I beat the record.
Yes.
And actually, the first record, the old record, was in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Oh.
But this year, I won. It was another organizer, not the usual one. And my diploma was not signed, and the charge was not given over to the original organizer.
Oh.
I mean, the timetables and
yeah,
so
yeah.
on. So there was no proof of my world's best time.
Oh, no. Oh.
But it's 1 minute and 43 seconds of riding up this tower and down again.
Oh, brilliant. That's
it's I believe it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
Fantastic.
It's so, so hard.
Ah, let's see what have I got here.
Oh, I should have brought my medals from Unikine unicycle tournaments. Oh, I have about 50 kilos.
Just send me a photo.
I think I have 50 kilos of medals. But the best one is the first silver, the first gold medal from Unikine. That's
brilliant.
That was from downhill gliding. Do you know the gliding competition?
I've seen it.
Well,
to
explain for people who it's not unicycle, yes. Gliding is you speed up your unicycle. You have 10 meters to put speed on it, and then you put one foot on the frame on the unicycle and the other one on the tire, but only for braking because you're going downhill. So the competition is to go downhill as fast as you can, braking as little as possible.
Yes.
It's a good idea with the helmet for this competition, because you're going. In 2000, I've been practicing so much on a big hill. I was close to where I lived, and I wasted many shoes on braking on the tire. But in China, there was this very steep, very long hill, so we were flying downhill. On that, just braking a little bit.
Yeah.
And the problem is when you get on this high speeds, the unicycles start to wobble because of the pedals and the cranks.
Yeah.
They're not evenly distributed, the weight of the unicycle.
Yeah.
So the pedal comes forward, it turns the wheel a little bit, and the unicycle wobbling like crazy, and you have to try to keep it steady while you're riding with your legs. Yeah. That was great fun. So I came first in the overall competition back in 2000, and that's the greatest prize.
You're way ahead of me. I can never.
But
win any competition.
Can you remember we met at Unikine in Japan?
Yes.
In 2004. At that Unikine, I made myself very noticed.
Oh yeah.
Because. We had the trials competition. Trials is where you jump on stuff on your unicycle.
Yeah.
And at the world, well, I was at the first trials competition in the American Champion Nationals in 97. But since then, it progressed a lot. And in 2004, it was very big sport, very big obstacles. And I was participating. Of course, it's the greatest competition, and we have this big cable spool, giant cable spool. It was maybe 2.5 meters tall, so 8 or 9 feet tall.
Yes.
The wheels on the cable spool, and they put it upright, so it was standing on the wheels, dug a little bit into the ground so it would move, and they made a pole that went up to the one side. It was on top of a hill, so it wasn't that steep. So we had to jump onto that pole and ride up to the one wheel of the cable spool.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to jump across to the other side of the cable spool,
that
rim.
I was there.
And jump from there to the ground and land on 6 pallets.
Yeah.
So the jump down was 1.5 meters, I believe. So it was a fairly long jump down, but it was all right.
Yeah.
I did it. Quite all right. I went onto the pole. I rode it up to the cable spool. I jumped from the one rim to the other rim of the cable spool. But then my unicycle slipped backwards. And I was hanging horizontal in the air above that cable spool, and I fell. That was quite a long way down.
Yes.
Well, the cable spool was 2.5 meters, and I was on top of that. So my head was probably 3 meters in the air.
No.
And I landed face first on the pallets. With my mouth on the pallets.
Lars, I was watching. It was horrible to watch. We thought you might have died.
Yes. And I was told that one girl fainted from looking at that fall.
I was there. I was in the audience. It was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. I got a neck collar on very fast and was bleeding out of my mouth. And everything, and Roger from unicycle.com came and he did knew some paramedic, I believe, and then patched me up. And we got the ambulance, and I was ushered off to the hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
And I managed to shut down the trials course for the next 2 hours.
But you can't make it.
But I went to the hospital.
Yeah.
I went to the hospital, and they did a fantastic job. They stitched me up around my mouth. I got 16 stitches in my upper lip and on my jaw, on the lower lip, yeah. Because I've... Yes, well, open the skin.
Yes.
But nothing else has happened.
Wow.
My neck was all right. My back was all right. My teeth was all right.
Wow.
I'm built quite sturdy. So I somehow managed to land that fall pretty good. So I came back to the competition.
That's
with
what
my
I remember.
Lips.
Yes.
Swollen up, blood everywhere, and iodine everywhere in my face, and yeah. Said, hey, I'm ready. Should we reopen the competition? Can I participate again?
Yeah, I know. Cheer when we saw you come back. We couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
the same
amazing.
Day you were back, all bandaged up. And there you were.
Yes, yes.
Awesome.
And they said, no, Lars, you are not participating anymore. Hey, but I'm ready. Come on.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I look horrible. I look horrible. I had my former wife. She was along on that trip, but she was not on the trials course. So when she came back, we came back from the trials course, all the entire national team piled into our room and just looked there to, they wanted to see her reaction when she saw me and my lips that were three times the normal size. And she just said, oh, what you done now? Come on, Lars. She was so used to me hurting myself. And yeah, but I was back in competition the next day.
You were?
Yeah, we did the 100-meter sprints, and yeah, it was great.
Brilliant.
I had big lips, and I managed to get a headband saying kamikaze in Japanese, and I wrote that on the entire time.
I remember. Oh.
Everybody knew who I was.
Yeah, famous. Oh, that's a good one.
We haven't talked much about unicycle.com.
Tell me, who ran unicycle.com Denmark for a while?
Yes, back in the days, we did get the Denmark to the Unicon with the Danish national team, and I did so much in unicycling back then. I was running, getting people to work between clubs in Denmark. And started a national organization for unicycling. So I spent a lot of time opening new clubs, helping people to start a club. Went there to learn, help them practice and set up the system. And I kept buying unicycles from Germany, from Roland, unicycle.com in Germany. That was the easiest way to buy it. And I sold them to other people. And sometimes I got a discount from Roland, and I sold the unicycles for a normal price. And I made a little bit money on that. And I sold hundreds of unicycles. And then a guy I had on the national team from the beginning and we said, well, why don't we start a unicycle shop?
Yeah,
we can sell these to the entire country and makes real money on it.
Yeah.
So we did start a shop called Unisale .dk, and it boomed, and we bought mainly QX unicycles from Roland, and then we got into contact with Roger, and who runs unicycle.com in England is the founding owner of unicycle.com together with Amy Drummond in the US.
Yeah.
And after a long time, we got the negotiations in place and we could start the Danish franchise of unicycle.com.
Yeah.
And then we could order directly from QX, and we could order containers from Taiwan. So suddenly we have to buy a whole container of unicycles. Can you imagine? That's quite a lot.
Yeah.
So we had to expand a lot, and we did a lot of things, and it went very well. And we sold so many of the QX Luxus unicycles. Mm-hmm. That was the best beginner unicycle at that time. And unicycle.com had their, I can't remember the model back then, but it was with rounded frame and it had very long cranks, 125 millimeter cranks on a 20 inch wheel.
Okay.
That was what they thought saw as the best combination for a beginner.
Right.
Because your best gearing, leverage, it's easier to turn, but you easily hit the ground with the pedal when you're turning.
Yes.
And that, I don't like that.
Yes.
So we developed this new unicycle called the UDC Club unicycle.
Mm-hmm.
That one was developed for specifically for the Danish market, for the Danish clubs.
Yeah.
That's why it's called a club unicycle.
Right.
So it was made from my specifications, what I wanted on a unicycle, how it should be to be the best unicycle it could be, but still as cheap as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
So we wanted a white tire, and we as a standard, because I always swap the tires, because in the clubs in Denmark, you always have to ride white tire or non-marking tire.
Non-marking
and all the unicycles came with black tires.
Yeah.
So we had to have a white tire and so on. So that was developed for the Danish market, and it really took off. We sold a full container of them in Denmark every year. So it was great. It was really a fun time.
Boom times.
And we were actually involved a lot in the development of the Nimbus Eclipse unicycle as well.
Really?
Do you know that one?
Yeah.
It's the aluminum. How do you say that?
In England, we say aluminium.
Aluminium. Thank you. Unicycle. It's made in aluminium. Even the hop. So it's so light. That's the one I'm performing on.
Wow.
And that was developed with the Danish national team as well. So they tried it out and say, hey, how can we do this better? How can we do it better for stand up tricks and so on. It was, it's so fantastic to be involved in the development of a sport like this.
Yeah.
I really love it.
Wow.
But a couple of years back, that was, I think it's 2016, we sold the shop because I was doing so much other things with my balloon artist and performing. So this was, I was not involved in unicycle sport this much anymore. So we sold it to the girl, Tanya, who took over the national team as well.
Yes.
So she also took over the shop and bought this from us and ran it for a while until the market in Denmark went downward. So unicycle not this big in Denmark anymore. And she couldn't, there was no market for a shop.
Right.
But it was a very fun time. We ran the unicycle brand in Denmark for 10, 12 years, I think.
You are part of the history of unicycling. You are part of it.
Definitely, yeah. It has been great, great story.
Wow. Good job, buddy. Good job.
Thank you.
And let's promote the Unicons, the Unicycle World Championships as well. Because I've been to a couple, and Lars has been to about 10 of them, I guess. So let's promote the Unicycle World Championships, the Unicons.
And usually there is about 2,000 unicyclists together at a Unicon.
I know.
At least 1,000. It depends on where in the world it's being held.
Yeah.
So somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000.
Yeah.
It's great fun. So if there's any listeners who's riding a unicycle who has not been to a Unicon, a world championship, or it's more like a convention, I would really urge you to consider it and join us, because it's so much fun. Because of course, you have the competition. Some of them are very serious. The basketball tournament, the hockey tournament, yeah, the freestyle competitions, the trials competition. But there's fun competitions as well, sumo and still stand, slow racing. But the benefits are in all the workshops, all the late night talks, and you ride together and you go up in the mountains on some rides. No. And you get to know all the unicyclists, and you always double your capacity on a unicycle the first time you go to a unicorn.
Yeah.
You get such a boost, yeah, in tricks and abilities and everything, so you come back home much better rider than when you left.
That's right.
It's fantastic.
That's right.
I have a clear example on the national team. The first year we went, uh-huh, in 2000 to China, I had a requirement for them that said you have to be able to wheel walk if you want to come. Oh. You have to learn to wheel walk before we go, otherwise you stay home.
Right. Okay.
So they worked a lot on that, and that says gives you this the level of them. They were not very good.
Yeah.
They were not excellent riders yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because wheel walking is not that difficult. It is a low level trick.
Mm.
But before they went home, everybody was doing stand up wheel walking.
Wow.
So they learned to do stand up wheel walking at Unicorn.
There you go.
And that is a high level skill.
Yes.
That is so much harder than doing wheel walking sitting down.
It is true. When you see other people doing these tricks right in front of your eyes, something changes in your brain, and your brain says, I think it's possible. I know,
yes,
it's possible.
It's all right that Lars can do it. He's Lars. He can do anything. That was kind of their perception.
Yeah.
But seeing 200 people doing stand-up wheel walk and doing even backwards and stand-up gliding and stand-up all this kind of thing, they said, wow, if they can do it, I can do it.
That's right. So go to a unicorn if you can.
Come and join us. It will be great fun.
Oh, I saw some videos of you on a 20-inch, and your seat post seemed to be very high because you're almost on tiptoes on the pedals. Is that normal for you, or is just
yes,
a rare video?
Yes. I always ride my unicycle a little bit very high. I'm not able to ride Jamie's unicycle. Jamie, you had on the
Jamie
previous
Mossengren.
Show.
Jamie Mossengren.
Mossengren, yes. He has legs that are as long as I'm tall. So his unicycle is the tallest in the world I've ever seen. But I ride it quite tall. I always say that you have to have your seat in the height of your belly button.
Mm, mm.
And when you're riding, you should only be able to touch the pedal with your heels, just barely. So when you're riding with your toes, it's the right height. And I got long legs, so my unicycle is quite high.
Mm. But do you find it's a bit harder for certain tricks where you've got to pull the saddle out in front, but you can still manage?
Of course,
it.
Yeah. But of course, you can also always, you just stop with your pedals
horizontal
and you stand up and then you can pull it out.
Ah,
the problem is getting it back in. And I also do the short cranks. Not quite as short as people are using for performance show. The freestyles nowadays, they perform on 90 millimeter cranks.
Mm.
Well, that's crazy. It's great for riding fast and
yeah,
steady, but if you need to put a kit on your shoulders and have the maneuverability,
yes,
and the
yes,
power in your legs and the pedals to avoid falling, I ride with 110 millimeter cranks,
yes,
or 114.
Yes.
I can't remember,
yes,
one of those two.
Similar to me, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Short enough that they don't hit the ground when you're making a quick turn.
Yeah.
114 can't hit the ground, but still long enough that you have torque for and power for getting out of trouble.
Yeah.
Any tips for anyone who wants to start performing on a unicycle?
People, they don't enjoy the hard tricks on a unicycle. They enjoy the visible tricks.
Yeah.
So you doing a spin or riding backwards or hopping
looks
is
great.
Far more impressive than doing stand up backwards wheel walking.
Yes.
Which is insanely hard.
Yeah.
But quite possible. Yeah. I can do that, but I've never done it in a show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because I do the easy things because they work every time for me. I never fall off doing my tricks. Yeah. And people have no clue if one trick is harder than the other.
That's right. Oh, there's one last thing I saw. You can do a mingling act, a roving act, on little tiny bicycles.
Yes, a mini bike.
Mini bikes, That's
made
lovely.
From the unicycle.com, yes. Yeah, it's a very small bike, and it's about 40 centimeters long and about 30 centimeters tall, with very small 8-inch wheels. So it's very hard for adults to sit on it and ride because you have to lean your weight over the steering, the handlebars, and the front wheel, and ride with your heels.
Huh.
But I was performing on a big boat, cruise ship or small, the big ferry, for a month, and had a show every day, and lived on the ferry, on the boat. And I rode around on the boat between the shows or up to the show, commercial promoting the show on these small mini bikes.
Yes.
It's great fun.
Hey Lars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking. Thank you. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Ben. It was nice to talk to you.
All right. Stay in touch. Let's not leave it for 20 years next time.
Let's not do that. You're right.
And of course, Lars does do a lot more than just unicycling. There'll be another podcast, a part two. We'll be talking about all the other things he does, such as balloons. All right. We'll talk to Lars again. But in the meantime, take care. Take care. Goodbye.
Well, this guy just walked up and stopped the show. So I said, sorry, guys, everybody. Thank you for coming. This was the end of my show. I'm out of here.